This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver
Commercial
Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. I'm Corey Wright.
And I'm Adam Scalina, your sometimes host. Corey, you're looking like a guy who just suffered a big loss last night.
So we're gonna date stamp this. What do we got? May 21st?
Yes.
May 21st. Tuesday, May 21st. Coming on the heels of a disappointing Game 7 loss last night to the Oilers. But I will say this. Canucks have to be the best team in the league for 40 minutes of every game.
We
played two of the three best periods every game. It's that damn third period that we got to play.
Yeah.
At some point during the game, like yesterday, maybe I'm correct me if I'm wrong, 0-0 after one.
Yes.
That's a win. We'll take that as a good period.
Yeah.
3-0 after two Edmonton. Not liking that one. 2-0 Vancouver in the third. Put it all together. 3-2 win. 3-2 in Edmonton.
Yeah.
If we could have just tightened up that second period a little bit, we could be singing a different tune right now.
Totally. Totally. I agree. And I was happy to wake up and see that the city was not burnt to the ground.
Yeah.
I feel like we've matured as a fan base.
I think if you looked at the start of the year too, you know, we haven't been in the play. Like Canucks have been the best golfers in the NHL for years, year after year after year, it feels like. This year, I think a lot of people thought the Canucks would probably be golfing at this time of year.
Right.
So the fact that we did as well as we did, and went pushed Edmonton, who was arguably one of the cup favorites, if not the cup favorite at the start of the year, to game seven. I think you got to look at the whole season. That's a pretty big win there.
And last but not least, I remember reading that something like 95% of analysts or higher than that even thought that it would be like a sweep in four or maybe five.
Yeah.
I think Canucks did quite well compared to what people thought.
And I don't want to take anything away from how good the goaltending was for Vancouver. But going into the playoffs, you got your third stringer.
Yeah.
Usually teams that win the Stanley Cup or go deep into the playoffs, usually your best player is your goalie, who's usually the top goalie in the league or one of the top goalies in the league, not a third string guy.
Right.
Who don't take anything away from him. He did phenomenal.
Yeah.
And the argument could be Demko probably may not have done any better. But when you got one of the best goalies in the league, who unfortunately wasn't part of the playoff run, you know, that says even that much better we did on the heels of a third string goalie.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, welcome back to the Vancouver podcast. Yeah.
This podcast is presented by Impact Commercial.
Impact Commercial. John, Alan, the team over there are fantastic. They've all been on the show.
They have. Yeah.
Friends of the show.
Great guys.
Wealth of experience. They can help with all your commercial financing needs.
Whether it's owner occupiers, land development funds, commercial investments, or multifamily, these guys got you covered.
And they recently obtained their CMHC correspondent lender status.
So for all your commercial lending needs, visit them at impactcommercial.ca.
That's impactcommercial.ca.
Attention realtors, homebuyers, and investors. If you missed out on Atlin at Clayton Crest by Zentera Developments, here's your second chance.
Atlin sold 80% in just 3 months, Adam. And because of that success, Zentera is launching Building 2, Butte.
Located in West Clayton and walking distance to the future SkyTrain station, prices are still low for now, but not for long.
Homeowners across the Lower Mainland are using equity from their current homes to invest in West Clayton, ahead of the SkyTrain and the next market upswing, because when that SkyTrain is complete and the market rebounds, it'll be too late.
This, Matt, is how wealth is built. Find out why Atlin sold so fast and register now at buttecondos.ca. That's B-U-T-E condos.ca.
No, but honestly, today we're sitting here and you already time stamped it, but May 21st, we're like midway through the year almost. Here we are, have a better insight into 2024, into the commercial real estate market. And so some of the things I wanted to get from you today is a market update, talk about the classes that are performing, maybe some that are underperforming, talk about the best markets for 2024, maybe some of the lagging lease markets, and talk about, you know, what's going on in the city of Vancouver, who's buying. We've got a whole bunch of stuff we're going to talk about today. And then, of course, forecasting for the balance of the year and 2025. So lots to cover today. But first, Corey, maybe as an intro question, how's the market?
Extremely busy. And I will say that in commercial real estate, a lot of times we lag inventory in a really, really good market. And in a really bad market, there's just never been an abundance of inventory. Now, I say it's really busy. It is market dependent and is asset class dependent. With all due respect, nobody's signing up to buy a Vancouver office building right now.
Right.
But when you get the right asset classes in the right market that are priced in today's market, gone. Multiple offers we're experiencing in some cases. Even on the leasing side, well-positioned properties are still getting top dollar and they're still getting multiple offers on it. So overall, extremely busy. Think the last half of this year will be even that much better.
Okay. So first of all, so just kind of going through some of the asset classes. So industrial, is that still kind of the prize?
Yeah. So you kind of hear like, you know, the one thing I will say with this is when we're talking about how busy things are, the properties have to be liked by lenders because that also determines how busy it is. If me and you get the best deal in real estate history on an office building downtown Vancouver, we might struggle to find a lender to finance it. So lenders are still very much like beds and sheds, you hear, where it's kind of like industrial multifamily. Comfort is really what it is. But industrial, I think overall, considering the lendability on industrial and the vacancy rates and well-positioned industrial, it would probably still be your prized asset. I will say this is there's a lot more inventory on the market now than we've probably seen in the past, I don't know, maybe 10 years, maybe going back that far. And that's probably a combination of a bunch of projects all getting delivered at one time, which is obviously going to affect the vacancy rate and the product that hasn't sold yet. So you're going to see naturally more inventory there. The absorption probably hasn't been as strong. And when you look at some of the smaller industrial markets or industrial units, maybe like a sub 2,500 square foot space, that's got your biggest owner occupier to tenant ratio than any other asset class. And with interest rates as high as they are, it's hard for owner occupiers to buy because the product they were buying at 350 a foot, they're now buying at like 700, 600 a foot. It's still not easy. So you got more inventory to pick from on the sale and lease side than we've ever seen, but it's still at dramatically high pricing from where it was just years ago. And I think as we kind of plow through the end of 2024 into 2025, absorption will get better, excitement will get better, and that asset class will tighten itself right back up. Now, you may not see the gains that you saw if you bought 10 years ago, and you may not see the run on lease rates if you've owned it for the past 10 years that you might see over the next two or three. But I do think occupancy rates will be very, very high, which will push vacancy very, very low. And then sale prices will pick themselves back up as interest rates naturally just hopefully come off.
So is the challenging then the sub 2,500 square foot market then?
No, that's probably your best market overall because it's still the hardest. It still probably makes up the smallest percentage of the market.
Right.
Because a lot of developers don't build to that spec with it. But industrial as a whole is still really, really busy. I'd still bet money on the industrial market. But I do think that it's not going to have the same run it's had over the past 5 or 6 years. And if you buy a spot, it may not fill the very, very next day at like record-setting prices. You just can be a little more realistic with the asset. That's all.
I was talking to Meg Cooney from your office the other day.
Amazing
and
girl.
She was basically saying, in so many words, strata windups are not happening very frequently right now. Are development deals happening? Like, what are you seeing out there right now? Are developers buying land?
Yes, with a caveat. They are buying land, but they're having to be a lot more flexible on how they put the deals together, mainly on the vendor side. Financing costs are very, very high. Construction costs are very, very high. Financing costs are extremely high to put this stuff. And when you buy land, one of the most expensive things of the actual project is holding the land itself.
Sure.
So it may take, in the city of Vancouver, it may take me like 3 years or 2 years before I may get a shovel in the ground. Well, I got to pay for that land at probably prime plus four, which right now would be what that puts at like 11 and a half,
right,
give or take, to hold the land for the next 4 years on top of my $10 million purchase price. So now we're having to get a lot more creative in deals. Maybe there's VTBs, there's 1 year closings, there's 2 year closings that are happening. Developers are just having to put that much more equity into a property to actually get the deal to go. So are they buying land? Yes. Are they buying land with a lot sharper pencil and having to be more conservative? 100%. Is there developers out there who maybe have bought land before that now they have a lot of land sitting on their books. And they're like, I need to start moving some parcels because I can't afford to keep all this land at these interest rates. That's also happening. He doesn't see it. You don't see it on the public side of things where they're not getting listed, but those conversations are all happening behind the scenes. So developers, I think for the most part, are still very optimistic, right? Everyone believes that, you mean, we're not going to solve the housing crisis here anytime soon. It's just a matter they're going to be a lot more cautious in the near future right now, just with interest rates as high as they are. Hopefully, we're going to see those come off this summer, which may change a little bit, but nevertheless, your construction costs are still really high.
And so if you own in a building that's facing a rain screen and a parkade membrane and you're looking to wind up and you're expecting to get 2.5 times your market, maybe don't hold your breath.
Yeah, I'd say call the Scalina brothers. They'll probably have a better chance selling the condo than we all will be selling it to a developer. Because it's just, again, the cost to build. And like we had Brad on last week, which talked all about some of these costs associated with the cost of building out there. And those costs aren't getting any cheaper. Construction costs, you know, naturally aren't getting really any cheaper. Land costs are getting cheaper. Interest rates, even if they come off like 200 basis points, we're still really high, all things considered, from where we came from.
Right.
So, you mean, they just have to be more cautious there. So, go sell your condo as a condo is probably a better aspect than selling it as a strata wind up right now.
So right now, just thinking about, you know, in residential real estate right now, we are not seeing as many investors active as we have in other moments in this market. A lot to do with likely talks of cap gain increases. Yep. Lots to do with the Residential Tenancy Act undergoing some changes this summer.
Yep.
And on top of it, these interest rates, your carrying costs, the rents have gone up, but not enough to support the offset of the interest rates. Who's buying right now in commercial? Is it mostly owner-occupiers or is it investors? Is it a healthy mix?
It's probably a healthy mix, to be honest with you. Like owner-occupiers are still driving a lot of the markets in the asset classes that they can because they can get different financing options and me and you as an investor with regards to down payments and stuff like that. So that's still plowing ahead. But again, it's not going ahead at the same absorption rate it once was before. You go back 3 years ago, strata offices would sell like no problem. People could get great financing options on them. Post-COVID, office market looks different. Interest rates are different. Those things are taking a lot longer to move through. So owner-occupiers are still driving the market in most asset classes that they can drive the market in. Investors are also making up a good chunk of it, but you have to have some upside on it. If I'm buying a 5 cap rate of a retail building that has maximum rents attached to it, at record high interest rates, I'm putting a lot of capital down to get that asset. Now, could there be a chance to refinance a little bit of that capital out as rates come off? Potentially, but I don't really have any upside. So where investors are really looking for is if I'm buying a building or a strata lot or whatever I'm buying, if I see upside, maybe they're below market rents. Maybe there's a big development down the street that I know is going to come to fruition in 3 or 4 years. That will help drive where my asset is. You got to have a clear path to upside to make these interest rates work. If you don't get a clear path to upside, you got to get a very unrealistic cap rate to kind of almost make up for it. Because if you look at, if you go back 3 or 4 years ago when the COVID money was really cheap, I could buy a Nanaimo and get 75% loan to value on most of the assets. So for every $1 million, I could leverage up to $4 million. Now, if I take that same leverage and I buy something over there, I'm probably only getting like 65%. Maybe 55% loan to value. So my $1 million may get me $2.2 million. My $1 million 3 years ago might've got me $4 million. So you just have to be really smart. You have to have a clear path to upside.
How bad is the office market right now?
Ooh, that's a great question. For those listening who own, it's not as bad as it sounds. For those who don't own, it could be worse. I think what that is, I think the office is going to be a flight to quality coming back to it. And I think the hybrid model is probably here for a little bit longer than I think a lot of people thought. As an employer, I'd be very concerned about long-term corporate culture. I think that's a problem that I think they have to figure out because that's going to lead to like lack of retention of staff members. It's going to lead to a whole bunch of things that I think we just haven't got there just yet. But I think it will be a flight to quality where I think the office buildings will have to probably be better office buildings, maybe more amenities or great locations close to SkyTrains or something to that effect that's going to attract tenants. And then those tenants will hopefully be able to attract employees because of the uniqueness of it. I think that will there. I think if you fast forward 5, 6, 7 years down the road, this conversation might be all for nothing because A, no one's building office right now. So naturally the absorption of what's there will be part of it. I think when you did look at, there was a bunch of projects that all kind of came to market during COVID, which is just bad timing overall. The absorption of that product hasn't been very good. the tech industry, like the WeWorks of the world and stuff like that. They made up a large percentage of the stuff that was backfilling a lot of our office market for us. It kept us very stabilized. Those markets aren't, the tech industry isn't what it is from an office leasing standpoint now. There is hybrid models in place. Maybe the hub and spoke model works where you have a smaller Vancouver office and you got like a suburban office or an island office to support staff. But I think if going forward, I think it will all get absorbed. We're not a head office city. And the biggest thing you look at, like downtown Vancouver as an example, you might have 70% like hotels and condos to 30% offices. Versus you go to a Calgary, you might have like 80% offices to like 20% condos and hotels. So we're in a very unique situation. And then we're also obviously landlocked. We're in a very unique situation that I think not as a head office city, large component of our downtown core is made up by residential, that the office market will backfill itself. I just think it's taking a lot longer than everyone kind of thought with it. Now, some markets might react completely different than what it is here, but even talking to like brokers in Edmonton, like they've even seen a decline in the vacancy rate of the Edmonton office market. Now, granted, they are government is kind of their major component there, but when the Edmonton market's looking better, you can only hope for Vancouver's office market will improve.
Right. I'm just thinking out loud about, you know, you commented about the amount of residential buildings downtown, which is obviously in many ways really unique to our city, right? You see a lot of people walking around and engaging the downtown core. We have a very vibrant downtown core. That said, we're missing a lot of people that would come to work, go get their haircut, go get lunch, go, you know, visit their dentist. How much has that impacted retail space, if at all?
I would say at least in the short term, we haven't really seen it flush itself out yet. Now, granted, have retailers struggled? No question they have. But I think with Vancouver, obviously you have large tourists and we have the cruise ships that come in. So there's so many other things that can kind of almost, I don't want to say replace the office crowd, but will help those retailer tenants in those slower times. Now, granted, the challenging part becomes like January and February when it's colder out and you don't have the tourists coming here and maybe you don't have the office occupancy where it is. Where it's just a matter, I think, of a lot of these retailers figuring out the ebbs and flows. But because Vancouver is a very vibrant downtown, whether it's office people or people living down here, you still get a pretty steady traffic. Like if you go to Yaletown, so any day of the week where you got the offices there and you obviously got a large component of residential there, it's always very vibrant. Now, it may not have like, it may not be $150 a foot vibrant, maybe $90 a foot vibrant, but it's still very, very vibrant. And I was having a conversation with an agent the other day in our office and we're talking about like Edmonton retail and downtown Edmonton. And they're at, the question was, why isn't there very much retail downtown Edmonton? I'm like, you ever walked around downtown Edmonton in February? You don't. It's minus 40, right? So in Vancouver, we're very unique because also the climate plays a big component. And even on shitty days where it's raining, there's still people mingling and walking about. We're a very walkable city and that really helps the landscape of that retail. So I think the retailers would probably arguably say maybe it was not as strong as it was previous years, but I think it's a lot stronger now versus most cities around us that it will easily balance itself out. And keep in mind too, when you build these towers that might have 200 or 300 units in it, there might be 5,000 or 6,000 square feet of retail. You might get one or two retail tenants. So you're not having 10, 15, 20,000 square feet of retail that has to get built out. Because if you get one tower, I got to have a parkade entrance. So that's going to take up a good chunk of the footprint on the retail level. You have to have a lobby entrance for the residents. So I might get 4,000 or 5,000 square feet of retail I got to fill some, you know, plus or minus a little bit. I don't have a large component to fill. And downtowns will always draw. Maybe not at the same rates, but it'll always draw.
Are we, so just thinking about lease rates and a twofold question. One is, have we seen retail lease rates decrease?
I would say it's a market by market question. Some markets arguably are probably higher than what they were before. But overall, I think in Vancouver, you'd have to say they've come off their peaks, yes.
And now in terms of office?
Definitely, 100%. Yeah, so office
is office right now, if you are planning, and I mean, I think we kind of touched on this, but we've had this conversation off air a number of times where right now with the rates the way they are, it definitely makes sense to be a tenant.
Yep.
When it comes to office space as opposed to an owner in many cases, right?
Yeah. So you can look at it. The challenge with owning it is your interest rates are so high. If you buy it as a shell, your construction costs are so much to build it out that you can almost lease it probably for 30 or 40, sometimes 50% less than you can actually own it.
Right.
And even if the interest rates come off a bit because the acquisition cost is so high and the potential construction costs are so high, it's hard to make up break that number kind of mesh itself, even over a 5 or 10 year when you look at paying down your principal. If you look at all that extra cash you're paying per month to own it versus leasing it, The question becomes, is this the best choice for my capital versus buying maybe a retail building in Nanaimo that might have a lot of upside on it? I might have a better trajectory of that capital there versus where I'm at over here because the discrepancy in the owner to lease numbers could weigh off. Now, how you balance those off, you put down $500,000 cash to kind of balance them off.
Right.
But then the question becomes, is that the best use of my $500,000?
Sure.
Would I be better to go buy a building in Nanaimo?
Right. So just thinking out loud about that then, are you seeing, is it challenging then to sell office space right now, especially if you have a tenant who's been in place for quite some time?
Yeah, I think if you probably have a better chance of selling it vacant than tenanted.
Right.
Just because a lot of lenders probably aren't terribly excited to have like an office investment in someone's portfolio now versus an owner-occupier. There'll always be a market for it. Because even as we're talking about, is it the best use of my capital? A lot of people are also very risk adverse, where they're like, nope, this is where I run my business. I want to invest in my business. I want to buy my building. They don't want to hear other opportunity options to them. To them, it's like, hey, I'm paying down my mortgage come hell or high water. I'm okay with that. Versus other people that might look at more risk. They might look at that money better spent on a building in Nanaimo or Kelowna or Kamloops where I'm going to get an upside on my rents there. But there's a risk associated with that. So owner-occupiers will still always drive those markets where they can. And if you have an office space, and especially if it's a smaller office space, 1,000 square feet, 2,000 square feet in the suburbs, it's still going to sell fast.
Right.
Because there's just not a lot of inventory to really pick from out there. And when you look at office sales of projects like in Langley or, you know, city center area or by the hospital there, you know, those projects are still selling and they're still selling at numbers higher than the previous project sold for.
Right.
It just takes longer to get sell through. That's all. But they're still selling.
And so I'm just thinking about people that own small businesses that are listening to this podcast, because for me, this seems like a great opportunity for a small business to get, you know, maybe an exceptional space at a lower lease rate and maybe terms that are more favorable right now than in recent memory, in recent past.
100%. So if you're an office landlord, whether it be Vancouver or in the Fraser Valley or the Vancouver Island markets or the BC interior markets, you're probably having to put more into the deal to incentivize the tenant. And that could be a combination of lower lease rates. That could be a combination of more free rent. It could be a combination of more tenant improvement allowance, where you're having to give more to get. And I think the quality of the tenants also goes a long way because the office market isn't what it once was. The tenant's covenant, which is the guarantee or who the brand is or who the personal guarantee comes from, plays a lot in going forward because as we're seeing now, not all businesses are going to thrive. And there's a big onus, I think, from a landlord on who the quality of your tenant is and how much you're having to put in to get them in. If you were looking at a business that you were very confident would be around for the next 10 or 20 years, that industry, and you're like, hey, I can go lease like arguably 50% more or 100% more than what I'm currently leasing now for probably only a 30% bump in my rents and get some help from the landlord to actually kind of build it out so my capital exposure is very, very low. And now I have the ability to drive double the sales potentially on a per square foot basis because my space is double. That's a good long-term strategy that you might be able to capitalize on now that you can't capitalize on in maybe 3 or 4 or 5 years from now.
Thinking about the markets in BC, and we often do top five, but there's let's be honest, there's not enough markets in BC maybe to do top five. Let's do top three.
Okay.
And work our way from down number one being the best, number three still being a great market. But what is the third best market in BC in your opinion right now?
Chilliwack.
The WAC is back.
The WAC. I don't think the WAC ever left. I think that if you go back 10 years ago, Chilliwack could have been its own province. By that, I mean it was so disconnected to the Lower Mainland in the eyes of investors, in the eyes of retailers. Because if I'm driving through Surrey, I kind of go like Surrey, then I kind of hit Cloverdale, then I hit Aldergrove, then bam, there's Langley, and I keep driving and all through Mission, and boom, right into Abbotsford. Everything connects. And then you leave Abbotsford, and you go on like a 25-minute drive in the middle of nowhere, and then this little town pops up.
Right.
So that's where it could have been its own province because retailers and investors didn't look at it as part of the Lower Mainland. I remember we used to do leasing. We still do tons and tons of work in Chilliwack. But remember 10 years ago, like having to like call tenants in Toronto's head office and like educate them on where Chilliwack was.
Right.
And it was never part of the conversation. I do think right now, as things have come off with regards to things, there's a great buying opportunity. By that, I mean, traditionally, where interest rates have been higher than they were, but not where they're at now, maybe Chilliwack was like a 5 cap rate market. Maybe Burnaby was like a 4, Vancouver, maybe like a 3.5. And then during COVID, everything turned regional. Like it was like a 3 in Vancouver and like a 3.5 in Chilliwack.
Right.
If you're buying something in Chilliwack at a 3.5 cap rate, and that's how your numbers have to work to make the investment work nowadays, don't buy it. But if I can buy in Chilliwack that has a great above average growth of the city, I have probably still a good run on lease rates, and I can get it at a 5 cap or a 5.5 cap today, arguably, that could be a 20-25% discount for where we might be in the next 3 or 4 years. And if I can get my rents up higher, now I'm getting a discounted purchase price potentially at lower rents, where it's like a double whammy in a good way, where now I'm getting a compressed cap rate, which drives my value, but my rents are up. So now I'm double dipping on the upside of it. That I would take all day long with it.
Is it realistic to get a 5 cap in Chilliwack these days?
Yeah. Right now you can definitely do that for sure.
And what asset class would you be looking at?
In Chilliwack, I would primarily look for good retail.
Good retail.
There is a lot of industrial there, and I think industrial is still a good one, but I would look for good retail because retail is challenging to find good retail in Chilliwack. You've got obviously Cottonwood Mall and everything kind of down that Vetter Road area there. That's really, then you got, Garrison, which you kind of keep going through. There's some good spots, but there's not a lot of them to pick from.
Right. And we're talking about a growing population.
Affordability, like as unaffordable as Lower Mainland is, that's affordability. They got a great school system. They got a really good school system. And, you know, I mean, nowadays, you look at Surrey 10 years ago, the biggest problem with Surrey was the bridges. Now Surrey's built out that you can live, work, and play in Surrey. What bridges?
Yeah.
Chilliwack is also kind of getting that where there's much more infrastructure there now. There's a lot of businesses like Molson Coors. Like they're a big employer out there. Lots of that stuff I think looks really, really good. And, you know, Abbotsford's a 20-minute drive if Chilliwack doesn't have it. So I would be, if I was buying something, I would buy something in there where I feel I'm getting a good cap rate today, still have potential growth on my lease rates versus maybe a market like Coquitlam, which I might be getting a good cap rate, maybe 4, 4.5, but I may not have that growth opportunity in my lease rates. That's why I think Chilliwack would be a good investment if in the Lower Mainland, anywhere.
Top markets in BC. We just had number 3 is Chilliwack.
It's our
number 2.
I'm torn.
I feel like between Kelowna and Nanaimo and Kamloops.
I have like 2A and 2B?
Yeah, 2A and 2B. Let's
see. Okay, I'm going to go with Kelowna and I'm going to go with Victoria for 2A,
Victoria,
2B. Mainly because cap rates have come off these areas, so you can get a better deal on what you could before. Now, granted, they may not go back to as low as they are, but both cities have a tremendous amount of upside still. And when you look at the industries that are growing there, you've got education and real estate and tourism. There's so many factors that are helping to grow those things. The one thing that we don't know that we haven't talked about yet that will definitely have major impact, I think, in a lot of secondary markets, Kelowna especially, Victoria is not going to be able to hide from it, but Kelowna especially is going to be the short-term rental impact. Because a lot of these places in the tourism market, a lot of them had a lot of Airbnbs and a lot of developments were sold on that aspect. So the question becomes now down the road, and you know, I don't know how well this has been thought through, but arguably, let's say in Kelowna, for argument's sake, I have 1,000 hotel rooms and I have 2,000 Airbnbs. So I got 3,000 in my total inventory for that stay. Now, if I take away 2,000 of those, I only have 1,000 hotel rooms. If I was paying $900 a night to stay at the Delta Grand with 2,000 other Airbnb options available to me, that those are now gone, and I have 1,000 hotel rooms to pick from, how much am I paying for that hotel room now?
Right.
That could have impact on the tourism. The other thing that could be questioned is if I rent my condo out to Airbnb people, they're probably spending more in that local economy than someone who maybe potentially is living there 12 months of the year. Because if I go to Kelowna for 3 or 4 days, I'm going to go check out the touristy spots. I'm going to go to the local pubs and restaurants. Like I'm there to spend money. But if I live there all year round, I may not frequently, my disposable income may not be as frequent into that economy as maybe if that place was turning once or twice a week with Airbnb people. So I think there's that stuff that will still have to have impact on it. But I think all this stuff will impact the secondary markets. When you look at a market like Penticton, which is probably, I don't want to say the Airbnb capital of the world, but that's a market that could have dramatic impact, both on the selling of assets, but also the local economy with how many people aren't maybe coming through on a continued basis, spending hard-earned money in that economy, wineries, retail shops, everything.
You know, I was just having this conversation with an agent who's in our office and mostly talking about how his clients right now are looking for hotel development sites.
Yeah.
And there seems to be a lot of demand for trying to do hotels. And I'm guessing it's because of tightening up of Airbnb restrictions. And, yeah. And you know, to your point about how much can these rooms per night cost?
Yeah.
I mean, Kelowna is beautiful, but
I pay $350 a night in Kelowna when I'm up there at the office in the summertime for like, with all due respect, to the Fairfield Marriott. I pay $350 for the Fairfield Marriott in Kelowna in the summertime. And granted, it's got some of the best powdered eggs at the buffet I've ever had. And it does have that red, really windy water slide that you can go down. But $350 that's a lot for a Holiday Inn pretty much.
Right.
In there, right? So when you look at those type of hotel prices that community is dealing with now, and then you go wipe out a good chunk of the Airbnb stuff, it's only going to drive demand up for those hotels, which is only going to make them pricier down the road. And I think on the residential side, here's a good question for you guys. If projects are being sold with the assumption of Airbnb income and that Airbnb income maybe doesn't exist,
yeah.
What is the value of that
now
property?
Now you just have a very expensive condo that you
can. Yeah.
And here's the other challenge as well is now, and then you go into the, you know, year-long lease, longer term rental market. And the challenge then becomes, well, now I've got a whole bunch of new tenancy rules that impact how I use this property,
yeah.
Right? Which has also been turning a lot of people away from our market. So I think there could be, you know, there could be some more inventory coming to market. And I wonder, because I know a lot of those buildings, I don't know the percentage of how many investors versus end users, but you got to imagine like a lot of buyers from Vancouver buying condos
in
Okanagan,
right? You'd have to think so,
with
right?
With no intention of occupying them themselves.
You'd have to think that. And then the other question becomes too, and again, I don't know how you could finance a condo for Airbnb purposes. Like I've never owned that. So I don't know if like banks will finance them differently. But if I was buying something with the assumption of Airbnb revenue, and that's how I was going to service the debt on this property, and maybe I was anticipating like 25% down on my million to make it work. If I have to go back to the bank and the bank's like, okay, well, that place would rent for $2,500 a month. So we had to make that float. So if you can put down 65% now, so $650,000, so it can float the $450,000 mortgage, we'd really appreciate that. So does it become a problem on the buyer's side, maybe with some pre-sales where they can't get financing because the banks are looking at these more as like investment properties, 6 months to 12 months versus the short-term rental income?
I'm still yet to meet in, well, I mean, I shouldn't say that. A lot of people have done exceptionally well with Airbnb, but in the last few years, most people that have rolled the dice with Airbnb that I know personally have had several challenges.
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah. And I mean, it's still, can it be profitable? Yes. But can it be problematic and a thorn in your side? Absolutely.
Because my understanding of the new rules are is like you have to, it has to be in your own dwelling. You can't be buying stuff.
It's the Vancouver rules just basically spread to, and with more diligence, I think, in terms of like audits and.
So here you go. Here's someone can figure out. So me and you go buy a multifamily building, not stratified.
Right.
Right. It's got one legal and one civil. We buy the building with 13 units and we occupy one of 13. Could we turn that into a hotel? Could we not rent out the other 12 units? Because it's our dwelling.
Are they single? Are they single rooms?
I don't know what to figure out. No, there's a workaround on everything.
I think the Vancouver, at least the connecting stairs was a big thing.
Yeah.
For homes.
Yeah.
So I think it would just have to be. Maybe there's a play in like an SRO type scenario.
Yeah. I don't know. My rule of thumb's always been if hope is part of your investment strategy, don't invest. And I think anything that has the government's control over it, there's got to be some hope that has to go along with that just because like they could retroactivate and change the rules as they go. So you just have to be able to maneuver with that.
And that's happening time and time again.
100%.
Now it's like a few times a year, right?
Yeah.
It's always a moving target. Okay. So we've got three 2A and 2B.
Yeah.
Just to recap, number three was Chilliwack. 2A and 2B was Kelowna and Victoria.
Yeah.
And then number one market.
Number one, Nanaimo.
Nanaimo.
Still very bullish there. Why I haven't changed my tune is when you go look over there and you find a lot of buildings that have local ownership, and there's nothing wrong with that, but sometimes I don't understand the demand for the product from the outside coming in with regards to investors and tenants. And when you look at a lot of rent rolls out there, you can find like tenant A has paid $9 a foot year one to five, and they renewed for another five at $9.50. And that's kind of maybe a local mentality that kind of comes with it versus when the investors kind of get in, or more structured investors get in, they look at market demand. And it's not uncommon to find good assets over there where you have lease rates that are sitting at 12, 13, 14 bucks a foot that arguably are probably double that. So if I can buy something in a market there at a 5 to 5.5 cap right now, which will probably compress itself to 5, 4.5, but I can double my rent, I've got so much upside. Now, granted, it is a smaller market. It's 100,000 people, trades in about a 250,000 person trade area. So things don't typically go as fast as they may do in other markets. But as long as you have a clear path to the upside where you're looking at a building like, yes, I know that tenant's paying $9 a foot, but I also know the neighbor guy is paying 30. So I can buy it, I can sit for 2 years, and maybe that tenant doesn't stay, but I can renew it with a new tenant, bring a new tenant in, and I can get all my costs associated with the retenancy accounted for. I'll buy that all day long. And a lot of these markets where these opportunities, these big turns, don't really exist still. And like a question someone asked me, is like, why not Kamloops? It's 100,000 people. So is Nanaimo. The difference is, I think for Kamloops versus Kelowna, Kamloops is more isolated. Nanaimo's more trades in the Central Island area. So you have a bigger trade area to draw from. I think one thing that I think people have to be aware of, and it's nothing negative, it's just a fact of life. You know, I mean, as you know, global warming continues, these places are going to get hotter. They're going to get drier. And fires aren't almost like if, but when. And I think that's something that, you know, as investors, everyone has short-term mindset, right? Like, don't get me wrong. These things happen. It's a week long of a tragedy and everyone's kind of like, I don't know what's going to happen. And then we fast forward 2 weeks. Everyone seems like they forgot about it. But I do think it will impact people's long-term decisions, maybe not on the investing side, but if we're going to go pack up my family and move to Kamloops, it's something I have to think about because it's something I probably had to live with, unfortunately, that maybe I don't go to Kamloops. Maybe I go to Nanaimo because it's not as prevalent over there as it is in the BC interior, purely just based on climate.
Right.
So I think that is something that people have to consider. But also, we talked about Chilliwack earlier, how it was so isolated. Kamloops is still a great market. Don't get me wrong. I love the Kamloops market. I think Kamloops is an amazing investment. I just think Nanaimo might have a slight edge on it because it has a bigger trade area. That's all.
So the meme I saw this week was The Last of Us was filming in Nanaimo.
Oh, yeah. Downtown Nanaimo there. Downtown Nanaimo. It's commercial. I saw in the photos.
And the comments were that apocalyptic wasteland was a vast improvement over Nanaimo's typical downtown landscape.
Well,
what are your thoughts on...
Yeah,
there's some challenges that Nanaimo's facing.
Yeah, so I would definitely say like the downtown core, I'm pretty sure the picture I saw were like commercial area of downtown and terminal area.
Right.
I could be wrong. The downtown core does have its challenges, no questions asked. But I think when you get outside of that downtown core and you get into like the northern end of Nanaimo, or you get further up into like the Wesley Street area where they got all the character type stuff there, old quarters, sorry. Those areas I think are just tremendous because they're very niche markets. And when you look at a lot of the development in the north end there, the retail node there is so small. You've got Costco and all that stuff. It's all isolated. It's all crammed into a small area that if you can get the opportunity in these pockets in that market, that is where you're going to see tremendous upside.
And is that because you see the retail not being able to service the growing population in the region?
Yeah. And there's also there's not that much retail to pick from.
Right.
Right. So I'm not going into an area where there's 500,000 square feet to pick from. I'm going into an area where like there might not be a lot. I remember I had this conversation with a banker and it was, we were acquiring a piece of property in Nanaimo in this area. It was a retail building of all things. And the guy, the banker, asked me, what's the vacancy rate of retail in Nanaimo? And I was like, your guess is as good as mine, but ever drive around and see a for lease sign? The guy's like, oh, no, I never thought of that. I'm like, there you go. Right? So
Amazing. And maybe as a final question, Corey, because we're now almost at 45 minutes here today, but what do you think the balance of 2024 does and maybe going into 2025?
Well, I'm going to be very optimistic and say that our rates are going to pull off. June 5th meeting will be a positive. I'm going to be very optimistic with that.
Well, you know, and reason to have more optimism, I mean, today I think the headline was the inflation cools to three-year low at 2.7.
Yeah, it was great. So I think, you know, I mean, and this is, we've talked about this before, and the question becomes, is a 2% inflation target the real target now, considering that trillions of dollars were pumped into the economy by the government during COVID? You know, we have record-setting immigration coming in. We have costs are so high everywhere.
Shelter
you look.
Costs that, you know, that drive things up.
Yeah, that. But the problem is you can't change the goalposts in the middle of the middle of the problem, because then no one will ever believe you.
Right.
So you have to kind of like compress it down to two, then revise the year after, then come out and say, "Hey, 3% is our new target." You can't change. I get you can't change it now, but I think the back part of this year is better than the front part of this year, because I think interest rates, just from, you know, the most powerful man in the city is probably Chris Galis. And by that, I mean, he sits there at the global news desk. And if he says, housing prices are up, sales are up, naturally, everyone's going to run. Versus if he says, oh, inventory everywhere, prices are down, foreclosure. Naturally, as armchair, you know, watchers, we're all like, the market's going to, oh, the bubble's bursting, right? Yeah. So that's where you have a lot of that stuff will come to the surface. I think with that same sentiment, that once interest rates pull off, you're going to see a further cascading effect where it's almost like that IKEA commercial, like start the car, right? Where people are going to be like, oh, they said on the news, it's going up. We better buy, honey. Yeah. And I think a lot of that will filter back into it. And then naturally that will lead to more news headlines of sellouts and all this stuff. And so I think the back part of our year would be better if the rates continue to pull off, because the cascading effect of people just feeling the FOMO, like I have to go do it now, is going to be. I don't know if the civilized investor is signing up right away, because they're kind of like, rates are still really, really high.
Yeah.
But I think the opportunities might be there. And in our side of the business, inventory is very low most times of the year, including right now, which is like a spring market, which we haven't seen like an abundance of inventory. So it just makes that much harder that you don't need to have 40 buyers to buy 40 properties. You only need 20 buyers to buy three. Versus the housing market might be different than that. That's what we suffer from on the commercial side.
Corey, how can people find out more about what you're up to and William Wright?
Well, you can reach out to me anytime by email, corey@williamwright.ca. You can sign up at williamwright.ca for the latest and greatest news. You can also call our Vancouver office, 604-428-5255. Let us know what you're looking for. We'll put you in touch with all the agents throughout the province to best help you. I know we're not going to do our six-pack today, but yes, Adam Nickelback is my favorite band.
You heard it here first. All right. Well, thanks for taking the time today, Corey. And another great episode coming next week.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Enjoy. Take care.
Subscribe today.